We are living through the first crisis of our brave new world of securitized financial markets. It is too early to tell how economically important this upheaval will prove, but nobody can doubt its significance for the financial system. Its origins lie with credit expansion and financial innovation in the U.S. itself. It cannot be blamed on crony capitalism in peripheral economies, but rather on irresponsibility in the core of the world economy. Martin Wolf, Financial Times, September 2007. The crack cocaine of our generation appears to be debt. We just can't seem to get enough of it. And every time it looks like the U.S. consumer may be approaching his maximum tolerance level, somebody figures out how to lever on even more debt using some new and more complex financing. For years, I have watched this levering up process, often noting that it was taking an ever-increasing amount of debt to produce a dollar's worth of GDP growth. Jeff Sout, Chief Investment Strategist, Raymond James & Associates, September 2007. Virtually nobody foresaw the Great Depression of the 1930s, or the crises which affected Japan and Southeast Asia in the early and late 1990s. In fact, each downturn was preceded by a period of non-inflationary growth exuberant enough to lead many commentators to suggest that a new era had arrived. Bank for International Settlements, June 2007. For centuries, the importance of harvest time in the affairs of men made August and September months notorious for declarations of war, crop failures, and eventually, bank crises. The last connection was simple enough. Under the tight U.S. monetary reins of the 19th century gold standard, late summer demands for cash by rural banks usually skirted financial panic, but sometimes brought it. In the United States, observed one master chronicler, crises came in August and September, most notably in 1837, 1857, and 1873, when Western banks required large inflows from the East to finance shipments of cereals. If shortages of credit reflected the seasonality of farming, so periodically did a dearth of soldiers and military reserves. Armies have always had to watch the agricultural calendar. George Washington and other patriot commanders in the American Revolution knew that militia, in particular, would stay home for the harvest. Even in July of 1914, Austria-Hungary could not mobilize its armies for a quick invasion of Serbia to avenge the assassination of the Habsburg heir, Archduke Franz Ferdinand. Too many troops had been given farm furloughs through July 25th. In consequence, what might have been a short, localized suppression of Serbia dragged out into fatal weeks of great power ultimatums, mobilization, and counter-mobilization. The guns of August, which initiated the 40 million casualties of World War I. By the 21st century, of course, farm calendars no longer guided major events in North America or Europe, save for well-attended fairs and festivals or the pleasure of buying raspberries, peaches, sweet corn, and cider at roadside stands. However, in the United States, a new economic seasonality, the high point in late spring and summer of new and existing home sales, helped set the time frame for the financial market's 2007 mortgage and credit spasms. With falling prices came concern that housing's giddy five-year buoyancy had turned into a bubble, indeed one already starting to pop. Concern crystallized into panic, at least in the mass media and the credit markets, when June and July data dashed any lingering hopes for a sales and price rebound. Nearly a year earlier, very different public concerns, a quagmire in Iraq, and Republican sexual scandals and attendant moral hypocrisies had taken over the 2006 midterm elections, returning control of Congress to the Democrats after 12 Republican years. Worry about soon-to-be-inadequate world oil supplies and the mountainous U.S. buildup of public and private debt, particularly home mortgages, were merely clouds on the horizon. Perils, but not ones determining how people voted. Yet. Surging gasoline demand as springtime put motorists back on the road had focused May attentions on oil prices. That changed in mid-2007. Now, roiling financial markets took global center stage, spooked by home foreclosure data, several hedge fund problems, and ominous projections of further foreclosures and price declines to come. As the days passed, fear spread. From subprime mortgages to the collateralized debt obligations, CDOs, into which asset loans had been opaquely repackaged. In August, apprehensions also stalled leveraged buyouts for want of funds, made banks unwilling to loan to each other, and froze the normal activity in commercial paper and other suddenly hard-to-value situations and product innovations. The impact was worldwide. From London to Tokyo, credit market after credit market froze toward illiquidity. Buyers sat on their hands, kept inactive by too little information about the new product's enigmatic content and wary of undisclosed risk. The once sought-after CDOs could no longer be valued or marked to market, or even marked to model, the next resort, but only, as skeptics remarked, marked to make-believe, a poisonous perception. Investors heard talk of the possible deleveraging of the global credit bubble, the privately feared great unwind. Recession and deflation might be just over the hill. Other financial shivers, trembling municipal bonds, money market funds, and plain vanilla stocks, added to the worst August market chills since the mobilizations of 1914, had shut down bourses on both sides of the Atlantic. The New York Stock Exchange, closed on July 31, 1914, did not resume full trading for 4 months.